Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Right Stream and hashtag Right Stream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
Hello and welcome everybody to the first live Right Stream Tuesday of 2014. This is your host, Daria Ann, and I'm so happy that you're joining me today. And I'm also thrilled to see such an active chat room this afternoon. Very, very exciting. I hope you all had a wonderful Christmas and New Year and holiday season and are ready for an exciting year here at Right Stream because we've got a lot of great stuff coming up. It is freezing cold here today, in Florida terms anyway. I just returned to South Florida yesterday morning, actually, and I hate to complain because I know it's so much colder in other parts of the country, but I woke up this morning and it was about 30 degrees outside, which feels really unnatural when you're used to it being a lot warmer. So everyone, wherever you are, if you are in a cold climate, I hope you've got a nice cup of hot tea or hot cocoa accompanying you while you listen to our show today. I know I have a nice hot cup of peppermint tea right here, so I am ready. And as you know, in the first half of Right Stream Tuesday, I bring my guests on for 50 minutes and we do a really thorough interview about their books and their works and also their thoughts on social media marketing, writing, and publishing, all in an effort to share good information with other authors and aspiring authors, and also with readers, to kind of give readers an appreciation of what really goes into the production of a book. Whether we're talking about a novel or nonfiction or whatever genre we're talking about, I always find it very fascinating since the process, while it has a lot of common elements for everybody, it's also a very unique process for every writer. So I love discussing that with each of my guests. And the first guest for Write Stream Tuesday of 2014 is author Patrice Lyle. And gosh, I am so excited because she's multi-talented. She's won awards for her work. She writes in a lot of different genres, including one that she pioneered herself, holistic medical suspense. And I'm really looking forward to chatting with her about that, among other things, today. Patrice was kind enough to accept my invitation to be here. And so I'm really excited to get this interview started. But I first want to just read a little bit from her bio, which you can also find at patricebooks.com. That's P-A-T-R-I-C-E. Books with an S, .com. And I also put a link to Patrice's website in the chat room. Patrice Lyle believes in writing what you love. Since the age of 10, she's been doing just that. Her father's policeman tales sparked her love of mysteries. Stories of her great-grandmother's ESP sparked her love of the paranormal. And a trip to a drugstore in England, where she bought a homeopathic remedy for a sore throat, sparked her love of natural health. She has a BA in business, an MA in writing popular fiction, and a PhD in holistic nutrition, and she's a certified traditional naturopath. Now she lives with her husband and three cats near Memphis, where she's working on her next novel and trolling the area for ghostly happenings. You know, I'm really looking forward to chatting with Patrice about that because I'm also fascinated by the paranormal as well as scared to death, but we will definitely cover that today. So without further ado, I want to welcome multi-talented author Patrice Lyle to the program.
Hey, Daria. So excited to be on the show.
Oh, it's so great to have you. And Patrice, I forgot to mention, you and I, this is also another social media success story because you and I met recently on Twitter. So I find it so exciting when I make these connections.
I do, too. I am loving Twitter. In addition to being good for social media, it is just so much fun. I just love it.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, later on in the show, I want to get your thoughts on social media in general in terms of, you know, marketing your work as an author and really connecting with your readers. But first, Patrice, I want to give you an opportunity. I mean, I read your bio from your website, but I want to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself to our audience, and then we'll get into some specific questions.
Sure. Well, I've been writing since I was 10 years old. I started writing a mystery about two little girls who were sisters who solved a mystery at their Aunt Gertrude's house. And I spent most of my teenage years writing screenplays and some really awful poems and all sorts of things. And I kind of got to novel writing when I was in my 20s. I had written 6 screenplays, and I've always been working also as an accountant. And when I was in high school, I took accounting and writing, and I wanted to go into creative writing in college, but my parents were afraid that I was going to be a starving artist. So they talked me into getting an accounting degree, which I did. And in some ways, I thought, oh, should I really have done that? But the good thing about accounting is that it's very detailed, and with writing, I find a lot of detail obviously goes into it also. So then I continued working in writing, and then I joined Seton Hill University's program in writing popular fiction, which was fabulous. And from there, I got my master's, and my writing just blossomed and really took off, and I wrote a novel for the program. And since then, I've just completed my 11th novel, and it's my second in my Poison Ivy mystery series. So I've been writing, and I also have, in addition to my passion for creative writing, I have an incredible passion for holistic health. And I ended up working at my mother-in-law's wellness center for about 4 years. And while I was there, I finished a PhD in holistic nutrition, and I sat for a very, very long test, the certified traditional naturopath test. And so then I decided to combine my 2 loves and write Glisten. And that's kind of where that came to be and where it blossomed from. And one great thing about Glisten, since it is fiction, is I can say anything I want because I'm not writing it as a nonfiction book, which is kind of a fun avenue into holistic health.
Yeah, you know, that is such an amazing concept, Patrice. And before I ask you, we delve more specifically into that, I just want to say I'm amazed because, you know, that you sort of have that right brain, left brain talent, you know, sort of combined. Most people, we tend to think of writers as mostly creative types, but it's so true what you're saying about the technical aspects of writing. So I think it's really great that you've combined those 2 things. So let's start with Glisten, because what really piqued my interest when we first met was your pioneering of this new genre, this whole holistic medical suspense. Tell us a little bit about that, and maybe you can expand a little bit upon the story of you finding a homeopathic remedy for your sore throat, which I'm assuming kind of led the way for all of this.
Yes, I was in Europe. That's kind of another long story, but to make a long story short, preceding the homeopathic, I was a nanny, and I was started in Amsterdam, and then my sister and I ended up working at a pub in England. And at the time, I had really never been exposed to homeopathy, and I'll never forget because I had a sore throat, and my sister and I were working split shifts at this pub, and I had gone through the morning shift, and I was just feeling just awful. So I went down to the drugstore thinking I would get, you know, like a sore throat regular medication that I was used to seeing in the United States. And so it was kind of like a Rite Aid, and I went in there and I asked the girl where the sore throat stuff was. And she said, well, do you want homeopathics or like medicine? And I said, well, what are homeopathics? And she said, well, it's kind of a natural medicine. So I was like, oh, well, okay, that's interesting. So, of course, I tried it, and it really did help my sore throat. It was just unbelievable. And ever since then, I've always been interested in holistic health and learning how to solve health problems naturally without drugs. So that was very exciting. And then kind of where I went with Glisten is I really wanted to enlighten people about holistic health because when I was working at the wellness center, so many people that came in there had been dealing with chronic long-term health problems for a very long time, and they had never been exposed to holistic health. And this was their first foray into it. And they were just amazed that there was so much there and that it wasn't all voodoo like a lot of people tend to think. And I started thinking, well, I know there are so many awesome nonfiction books out there about holistic health, and I own tons of them, believe me. But then I thought, well, you know, if I went to a fiction aspect and kind of wove in entertainment in addition to learning, maybe that would be a way for people to be exposed. So I've always loved medical suspense myself. And then I thought, what about holistic medical suspense? And then I thought, you know, if I can get people reading the suspense angle and being entertained with a story, then maybe they might start learning about holistic health and it can kind of sink in that this really is something real and that there's a lot of power in it to change your health and change your life.
You know, that is such a great point, and I'm a firm believer in entertaining people in order to educate them, because not everybody, I mean, I love nonfiction books too, but not everybody's into that, and if you really want to reach that market and share some valuable information, the way to do that is through entertainment. So,
absolutely.
So tell us about Glisten. I mean, when did you start writing it, and tell us a little bit about the story and the process of putting that together and putting it out on the market.
Well, I started in 2009, I ended up having a pulmonary embolism while I was driving home on the freeway in Florida, actually. And to make a long story short, with my heart history and my family, I thought it was a heart attack, but it turned out to be a pulmonary embolism. And I had to go through all of these medical tests and all of these things. And I recall sitting at the ER about midnight in Tampa, And sitting back there with all these tests going on and thinking about the symbolism, and honestly, at that point, I didn't even know what one was and how deadly they were. My husband was there, and my mother-in-law, as I said, was an naturopathic doctor. I started thinking about all the stuff she'd been saying over the years and wondering if maybe I should have listened a little more. And then I just thought to myself, what if what she did was the only form of medicine? What would the world be like then? So the idea kind of started then, but it didn't really take root until 3 years later in 2012 when I got a juicer. And I had done a juice fast for a couple days, and all of a sudden, while I was blow-drying my hair, and I always get, by the way, as a writer, my best idea is blowing my hair dry. And it just this thought came to me that maybe because I'm zoned out, I'm not sure, but
yeah,
I recommend that. but then suddenly I just thought, oh my gosh, what if Western medicine was illegal? Western medicine as we know it. And naturopathic medicine was the only form of legal health care. And then I was like, oh my gosh, that is such a, it just gave me goosebumps. And so from there, I started brainstorming and I started thinking about what would this world be like. And then I was like, then I just came up with this idea of these two sisters, because I have a sister who I'm very close with. And I thought, oh my gosh, what if this whole holistic healthcare movement like tore these two sisters apart and, you know, their relationship had been ruined and they meet up later, but they're both on opposite sides of the battle. And then from there, over the years of writing, I've kind of come up with a really cool kind of a plot slash fun board, brainstorming board. I get one of those science boards that are black and a trifold, and I just put anything that speaks to me as an artist on there. I put, like, the title of the book. I put just any sort of blurbs or ideas, and I go into the character. And with Glisten, I went into a lot about principles of naturopathy. I came up with a Glisten timeline, how this really would work if this transition were to happen in healthcare in the United States. And then, of course, I wanted to get in a lot of holistic health stuff, so I started getting into characters and what sort of health problems they would have and how I could talk about it, all making it immediate scenes, though, with the naturopathic doctors. And that's one comment I got from people who were beta reading my book, was that they really loved that they could see the person's transition through holistic health through a character's eyes. So that was really cool. But that's been a tremendous help. And then the other thing I do for writing is something called the W plotting method. I took a workshop from, her name was Karen Doctor in Colorado like 8 years ago, and she calls it the Working W. And I can actually send it to you or anyone who's interested in looking at it. And it's a document.
I love that.
It's awesome. And it has basically, I've tried other things like Joseph Campbell's work and the Hero's Journey, which I love, but for me it's just too much. And I start getting into that bogged into too much detail, I can't work. So, but this W is high level. It starts with like the goal recognition and like the barrier, and then it kind of goes through a W shape of how the story works. And so for me, I did that, and then of course I do a W for each character, and then from there I was just like on a roll with this book. It's probably the fastest book I've ever written. And I decided to self-publish, and actually my editor for my children's books is a fabulous editor, and she does freelance editing. So she actually edited the book, and she's also a fan of holistic health. So I contemplated going with traditional publishing, and I actually contacted a former agent of mine, but she wasn't interested and thought it was just, you know, a little too different. And so I decided to go the self-publishing route, and I'm really glad I did, and it's been fun, and it's still turning out to be fun. And I just love, you know, if one person can read the book and get excited about holistic health, that's just what matters to me.
Yeah, and you know, Patrice, I love the idea of self-publishing, and I think I think over the years the stigma that has been associated with that has almost gone away, but I love the freedom that it gives us as artists to be able to pursue themes that maybe a traditional publishing company, just like you said, felt was way too out there or whatever, even though I don't believe it is. But
yeah, I agree, and that's one thing with my books over the years. It's always been just a little too different, and, you know, they always want that, you know, they always claim the same but different. Well, I've never really fit into their little holes of what was going to work, which, you know, that's not a bad thing. But it is, I guess, if you want to be traditionally published. But I, too, love the freedom of how when I'm working on my book, I'm really writing just for the writing now. I have that whole what I call publishing pressure out of my mind, whereas before I'd be – it really was just straddling me down and just limiting me as an author, making me think everything I wrote, oh, is this going to fit? And I just don't like that, and it doesn't turn into any good work either.
No, I agree. Now, Patrice, when did you publish Glisten? And tell us a little bit about the process of selecting the right company to self-publish it.
Well, I published it. Okay, I wrote and published the book. I wrote it all through 2012, starting in March, actually. And then we got through editing in November, and I published it in December of 2012. And for a cover artist, I have a fabulous friend and a critique partner of mine for many years. Her name is Viola Estrella. She does awesome cover art. So she did the cover, and she recommended a person, Judy Fennell, who's also fabulous, who does the conversion into different online digital platforms. Like, all of the requirements are slightly different, like for Barnes & Noble and Amazon. And I really didn't want to get bogged down into those details, so you can pay her to upload them basically for you and format them. And then for the editor, I was lucky to be able to use my editor for my traditionally published books because she does editing also on the side. And then basically, so Judy basically got it ready for the digital formats, and then I published it. So it was very exciting, and it was just an amazing concept to finish a book, have it edited, which I do think it's important to use a professional editor, because honestly, now Kat O'Shea is my editor for Elite Books, and she is just wonderful. She gets my work. I mean, she's done amazing work with my other books, and she totally got this book. And I really think if I had published it without her editing, that it would not be nearly as good of a story. So I think that's really important for the whole self-publishing process, at least for me anyway.
Oh, no, I definitely agree. I think when you independently publish or self-publish, the bar is even higher because it's like you almost have something more to prove in a sense. And so I think
totally.
People tend to look at it more critically because you're not – and whether that's right or wrong, but I agree with you 100%, Patrice, on that.
Yes, I think you're right that the bar is higher for us because people automatically – and even though I think especially among the author community, we definitely, the stigma of self-publishing has definitely gone down, but it's not completely gone in the reading audience at large, because I'll still get comments. Someone will come, we just had a booth, and they'll pick up my two books that are published by Elite Books and say, oh, and then they look at this, and they say, oh, and who published this one? I'm like, well, I did. I can kind of see just a little look. So the bar is higher, and that's why I think the editing is critical. And I think it's also so important to find an editor who gets your work and who really can just take your work and make it that much better.
Yeah, so very true. Now, Patrice, just on a personal level, do you prefer – I mean, I know we need to make our books available in all formats because there's such a huge market now for Kindle and e-readers and all of that good stuff, you know, brought about by new technology. But just on a personal level as a reader – do you prefer, you know, old-fashioned paperback, or do you like to read on Kindle or electronic format?
I have gotten completely addicted to Kindle. I think it's because with having a day job and writing, the only time I really have dedicated to fiction reading, which I love, I could do all day, is in the morning when I walk on my treadmill. And I battled for years with trying to read a book and holding dumbbells on either side, and you know, the book would fall off and the page wouldn't turn, and the only time it really worked when you were, like, smack dab in the middle of the book. But now with the Kindle, I just put it on there. I'm just tapping a button. And I have read, since I've had my Kindle the last couple of years, hundreds of books. And I walk every morning for, like, 45 minutes, and I read, and I love it. I mean, I get out of bed excited. I cannot wait to go read and walk. It wakes me up, and I get to have fun. I obviously love holding a book, too. I mean, I love that. You know, getting my first published book, Legally Blonde, when I actually held it was just amazing. So I do still love that, too. But, however, I will say one cool thing about Kindle is being able to read outside by the pool is pretty nice, too, because when my husband and I go on vacation, now I can bring a ton of books without weighing down my suitcase.
Well, yeah.
Which is what I was doing before.
Yeah, and people who maybe if you travel a lot for work or, you know, I can definitely understand the appeal because you bring one little device and you've got almost an endless supply of books and magazines and articles and things that you can download. So. Or upload onto it.
And also, you can also send your manuscripts to it. I've been able to send my Word documents. Now, I haven't figured out, I can make notes, like a flag something, but I can't make a note. But I think you can in the newer Kindles.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What I'll do when I finish a book, I will send it to my Kindle, and I'll read that on the treadmill over a couple of days. Or if I'm stuck and I'm halfway through and I want to read it and see what I think, that really helps, too.
Excellent. Now, Patrice, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned Legally Blonde, and I have your book trailer. I embedded it onto my promo for today's show, and certainly it's on your website. I want to ask you, in terms of marketing, let's kind of move into that, but I wanted to start with book trailers because that trailer is so good. How important do you think – yeah, how important are they to success, do you think, and in connecting with your readers and then ultimately selling books?
Well, I love book trailers because they're fun and creative, and that one I particularly love. We kind of, the way that came about is we were doing some advertising at a local movie theater in Frederick, Maryland, And Mark, the owner of the theater, hooked us up with the gentleman who does the marketing. And so for the commercial about We Play Blonde, it ended up being like, I don't know, 15 or 20 seconds. He developed this trailer with the flames and everything. And I was like, that would be so cool to make this a little bit longer to make it a book trailer. So that's how that came about. And as far as marketing, I don't know that I've seen a huge return, but I know that people love the trailer, and I know that trailers are very popular in our kind of like action-oriented world. We're used to seeing movies and TV. It kind of bridges that gap a little bit. So I think it's definitely important to have one. Now, I have not done one yet for Glisten. We were actually working with the same gentleman. So I do think it's important. I don't think it's a deal-breaker, though. But especially maybe for younger audiences, they might really like it also. But I personally like them, too. They're fun, and they can be very creative. But I still think, regardless of the trailer, obviously the book is the most important thing.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And the quality definitely needs to be there. Now, with Glisten, Patrice, I meant to ask you this before, and it seems like I know the answer to this, but I want to ask you anyway. Is this going to be a series of books? In other words, is Glisten just sort of the first book in a larger series that you're planning?
Yes, I'm definitely planning a sequel. I'm working on the sequel now, actually. I originally had thought it might be a trilogy, but I think it's going to end up just being two books. And then from there, I kind of want to maybe do some spinoff books, like on Dr. Amelia. She's a character in the book. She's the 80-year-old naturopath who kind of started the whole Glisten movement. And I thought it might be kind of cool to do some side short novellas, maybe focusing on different diseases and things that can be done, but of course in a fiction format. But the sequel will be available later this year. What was that?
I said, that sounds great. I love that idea of the novella.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool. I do too, and I think it's another great way to get information out there that people just aren't hearing at the doctor's offices, traditional doctor's offices.
Yeah, excellent. And I, you know, as someone who's been able to solve a few medical problems holistically myself, I definitely am. I definitely would be interested in reading that. And where can we get Glisten? And if anybody's listening and they're intrigued and they want to purchase your book, where is Glisten available?
It is available on Amazon right now. I'm working on getting it up on the other platforms. Right now it's on Amazon, both the ebook, and you can also buy the paper book if you'd like also.
Great. Okay, that sounds awesome. And Patrice, where did the name Glisten? Is there a story behind that, how you came to call the book?
It just kind of came to me also, again, it was just during this whole juicing phase. I don't know. It just like totally just like sparked my creativity. I don't know what it is about the juicing, because I take a lot of supplements and I lead a very healthy lifestyle anyway. But once I add that juicing, it's just unbelievable. And during this whole Glisten planning phase, when I first got the idea, I was like, now what am I going to call this? And I was thinking, well, what do people do when they're really healthy? And I thought, well, they glow. But I know there's Glow TV show on or something. And then I'm like, wait a second, Glisten. People, when they're really healthy, because I would see this transformation of people at the wellness center. They would come in on their first appointment and be, you know, not feeling well, sick with a variety of things. And they come back in their first follow-up appointment in 2 months, and they were just like, most of them were like glistening. And I was like, that is just perfect. And I actually have the definition from dictionary.com on the first page of my book. And according to dictionary.com, glisten is to reflect a sparkling light or a faint intermittent glow, to shine lustrously. I thought, you know what, that just gave me goosebumps when I read it. That was it.
That's perfect.
It is.
Yeah. I love that. And Patrice, before we go any further, I want to let our audience know that if you want to call in and ask Patrice a question, the call-in number is 347-945-7246. That's 347-945-7246. So Patrice, in addition to pioneering this new genre in holistic medical suspense, you also have an interest in the paranormal, and your other books reflect that. So tell us a little bit about your other books and what sparked, I know I mentioned it in your bio, but your interest in the paranormal, and I guess tell us a little bit about some of your experiences with that in real life, if you've actually come face to face with a ghost.
Yes, actually,
or anything
I have.
Of that nature.
With what?
With a ghost or anything of that scary nature.
Yes, as I said, and you read in my bio, we have some family stories, and my great-grandmother was very, very psychic and intuitive. And so I've always been intrigued by all of this, and so that definitely sparked my love of the paranormal. As far as, like, my personal experiences, I've had a couple. The night that my grandmother died, my husband and I were living in Colorado, and my mother and my grandmother were in Oregon. And my mother called to tell me that my grandmother she had a stroke and she was probably going to die. So I left work and I was at home and she called and said that she had passed away. And it was just a devastating moment and I was home crying and upset, and maybe a couple hours had passed and I never will forget this. I was in the kitchen and she had painted this picture of our oldest kitty at the time, Bailey. And Bailey was in the kitchen with me. I was holding Bailey, and I was looking at the picture, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw her walk by in this pink nightgown with little cap sleeves. And I looked at the clock, and it was like 6:58. And then suddenly I turned, and I couldn't see her anymore, but I could kind of see her in my mind's eye. And she said, "Oh, I see you have the painting up." And I said, "Yes, I love it." And she said, "I love your kitchen. It's really cute." And then all of a sudden, she was gone. And the weirdest thing that gives me goosebumps is I called my mom, and my mom had sat in the hospital room with her body for a couple hours before she could leave, or was able to emotionally leave. And she left at literally like 6:58. And it was just so weird. And that was the nightgown that she was wearing the night that she died. So
wow.
It's pretty amazing. And another amazing story, Anna, my great-grandmother, she was the one who was psychic. And on her deathbed, she gave my grandmother this purse. That my grandmother, who we called Mamu, by the way, Mamu had given my great-grandmother Anna a purse throughout her life. And so Anna kept insisting that Mamu take it back. And Mamu was like, "Mom, I don't want to take it now," because she just didn't want to, because she was dying of cancer and just didn't feel right. And Anna insisted, "Take it." So Mamu said, "Okay." So 5 or 6 years go by, and Mamu hasn't thought about this purse too much. So one night, she and my grandfather go out on the town, and we're all from Astoria, Oregon, and the closest big city is in Portland, 2 hours away. So they go out on the town, and she takes the purse. And this gives me goosebumps, too. So they're in Portland. They're going out. They go to dinner, and suddenly it's time to drive back 2 hours away, and they have car problems. And the car is literally broken down. And so they're like, okay, what are we going to do? And they didn't have a lot of money at the time, and they actually found a shop, and I'm still a little hazy on these details, that was able to fix it. And so, but it was going to be like $50. And this would have been back like in the mid-40s, so I'm not sure what $50 would be in today's dollar. But anyway, they didn't have the money, and they were in the car that was broken down, talking, how are we going to get this $50? And suddenly, she was overcome with this strong, intense urge to rip open the lining of this purse. And she thought, well, this is crazy. Why would I rip open the lining? And so she kept hearing, just rip it open. So she did, and I swear, there was a $50 bill inside the purse. And so she thinks that Anna gave that purse to her on her deathbed to prove that you could make communication beyond the grave. And Anna and my grandmother also were fabulous seamstresses. So I've always been hooked on paranormal, and I'm just intrigued by that entire story.
Oh my God, well, Patrice, you just gave me the chills with that story. That's incredible.
It is incredible. It's just amazing. I mean, we really don't know what happens after we go.
No, that is true, and I love reading that genre. So, tell us a little bit about, because I know you've incorporated the paranormal into teen and tween fiction. So let's start. Tell us a little bit about Lethally Blonde and how you were able to sort of incorporate some of those experiences and having family members with ESP into your books.
Oh, Lethally Blonde was still one of my favorite stories. It is so much fun. It's about a fashion-loving demon who works as a spy after school. And I came up with the idea one day. I was sitting in my cubicle at work, and, you know, as a writer, we go through many ups and downs. And I had just had a major down cycle with my agent and another book of mine not selling. And, oh, I was just beside myself. And I was thinking, what could I write that I would really love and that might be marketable? And then I was thinking, you know, I love Legally Blonde. I love Elle Woods. And I thought, oh, my gosh, what if Elle Woods was a demon? And I was like, oh, my gosh. And then from there, I just got into this story, but I wanted to do something different. Again, you know, demons are usually portrayed as dark and scary. And I'm like, no, she's going to be a blonde demon, and she's going to love shoes, and she's going to love fashion. And, like, all these ideas started coming to me. Like, she shops at Dante's. It's her favorite store. And she likes, like, a demon fat purse and Suburban Decay makeup. But I was like, oh, this is so fun. And from there, that just gave me the spark with the character, which is where I normally start with. And then I kind of wrote a few chapters in her voice, and then from there I started writing the novel. And, of course, she is a spy, and she has a boyfriend, and they're on a mission, and the devil in the book actually looks like a surfer. So I kind of did a twist on that normal, the way he normally appears in fiction. And I just had a blast with the book. And that ended up being my first traditionally published book. And it is just, I still love the character. She's so much fun. And the story is just cute. And what was really exciting is my first book is I got a really good Kirkus review, and Kirkus included it in its every year at Book Expo America, they do what they call the Kirkus BEA Big Book Guide, and my book was in there. So that was really exciting.
Wow, that's great. So, Patrice, what was, like, when you're writing teen and tween fiction versus, you know, writing a book like Glisten, is there a different mindset or a different mode as a writer? I mean, is it, does each one have different challenges?
Yes. When I do the children's books, and by the way, my first middle grade book just came out, that's The Case of the Invisible Witch, and I love that character too. Her name is Tulip. And she's a 13-year-old witch PI, and she has a little private investigation business called Spells and Spies, and it's just really fun. There's a parent ghost named Chester in there. But when I work on these books, my mind is definitely in a younger phase, I guess would be the word. I write in first person when I do middle grade and YA, and I write in third person when I do adult. So it is a different experience as a writer. I definitely I find myself thinking back to childhood a lot, what kind of things I panicked about in high school, especially when I was doing Legally Blonde. And then when I was working on The Case of the Invisible Witch, what sorts of things did I like, you know, when I was 13? And my dad has always worked in police work. And so in the book, The Case of the Invisible Witch, her father is a private investigator. And I remember my sister and I used to sneak downstairs and, like, look through his police files because we always had them in a metal filing cabinet in the basement. And just the excitement of that, and that just kind of puts me back in that mindset. And it's kind of hard to completely explain the difference, but there most definitely is a difference. It's more of a, parts of Glisten get a little somber sometimes when I'm talking about the disease elements and just the suspense element, which I love, but I also love the lighthearted fun stuff, which my paranormal is definitely light. It's not on the dark side. So that was actually one challenge for me writing Glisten, is I got more emotional and more deep with the characters and their emotional conflicts, like not seeing your dad for 20 years, not seeing your sister for 20 years. That was much more of a challenge for me, whereas I think naturally I definitely tend toward the light and funny. I'm more comfortable there, but once I start getting into that deeper emotional stuff, it's definitely different.
Yeah, excuse me, that definitely sounds that way. So Lethally Blonde, you said, was your first traditionally published book?
Yes, that came out on Valentine's Day of 2012.
Okay, wow. Gosh, all of this has been very recent, which is phenomenal.
Yes.
You've been so productive in the
yes.
last, especially in the last couple of years. That's amazing. So how, what was that process like, Patrice? I mean, you know, as far as submitting and receiving approval, and just tell us a little bit about how that worked.
Well, with Lethally Blonde, I started, writing that one in I started that in 2009. And it went through a few phases, and I had it's a long story, but I had an agent, and she didn't sell my first series, and then Lethally Blonde ended up passing on. And then I went to another agent who sent it to one house, and it didn't sell, and he ended up passing on it. So then there it was again. And then I got a third agent. I mean, I have luck with agents, but I do and I don't. I keep getting them, but this never works out. And that's one freeing thing about self-publishing is being out of that loop. But the third agent didn't work out. So then I decided, well, I'm going to try a smaller house. Because up until that point, my entire worldview as an author was that I had to be published with a big New York house. Because I know a lot of authors have been through these same thoughts. And so there was a smaller house called Leap Books who had just started. And the editor there had been at a place called the Wild Rose Press before, and she had passed on a book there of mine. But she gave me such great feedback, and it's like when I was reading it, I was like, oh, my gosh, this is why I didn't sell it in New York. She was right on everything. So I thought, I'm going to send Lethally Blonde to her. And so I sent it to her, and about 4 months later, I got the email first that she was interested in it, but I had some work to do. So she sent me a long list of things, all of which made the book tremendously better. And then she ended up accepting it for publication in, it must have been January 2011 because it came out in February of 12.
Great. You know, and Patrice, you bring up another good point that I think a lot of us as writers kind of struggle with, and that is, and it sounds like you are very open to this, but that is, you know, constructive criticism and being able to take that feedback and being willing to incorporate it to make your book even stronger.
Absolutely. If you can't do that, I really don't think you're going to make it as a writer. I mean, to me, and especially, and that's what's so critical, too, is finding an editor who gets your voice, because a lot of the rejection letters I got from a variety of New York people, you know, I thought it was cute, but they just didn't really connect with the writing. And I am just so thankful to the cats who have liked my work well enough to write me that long letter to let me incorporate the changes. And then, of course, once it got accepted, I had another series of letters. But every single letter you get, you know, when you first look at it, it's kind of like, oh, Lord. But once you start reading through it and realizing that it is all true, and I have never had anything that I didn't disagree with, and honestly, when I look at, like, the first draft of Legally Blonde to what was published, it's just night and day. And a really good editor can just push your work and just to such a higher place, and they give you so many great ideas and so many great tidbits and so many just little, kind of like little jabs that get you off into the right place, and it's just a night and day difference. And the same thing with my Case of the Invisible Witch, my new tween series. The book that I turned in and the book that came out is just, you know, there's really no comparison. And I wish, especially to aspiring writers like myself, struggling for so many years, I started at 10 and didn't publish traditionally until 2012, 31, so 20-some years, 41 actually, 30-some years. I really wish that we could see the kind of before and after, what was accepted versus what was published. I think that would be great.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and just as you said, I think a good editor can really push you to the next level as a writer and really help you to become the best that you can possibly be. And that's really, that should be the goal, actually,
yeah.
For a writer and an editor.
I completely agree. And one really awesome thing, having worked with her on 3 books now, and I just submitted the second book in the Poison Ivy series, my books now as an author, I'm getting better and better on the first drafts because I'm learning so much from her, which that's really exciting. Like, I'm working on a current work in process now, and I finished the first chapter, and I realized, oh, my gosh, I did the same thing I did with Legally Blonde. I started getting off on a tangent to get the character's voice, and that's not what needs to go in the first chapter. That's what I have to do to get to the first chapter. But then from all the techniques I've learned, I was able to redo it, and it's just, again, you know, growing as an author is exciting, and it's exciting when you can actually see your drafts, first drafts getting better than your first draft used to be.
Yeah, oh, I'll bet it's very rewarding. Yeah, Patrice, are you an advocate for people? And I always ask everybody this when they come on my show because I get pros and cons from different authors. And again, it's a very unique experience for each writer. But are you an advocate for joining, say, a local writers group and maybe attending on a weekly or monthly basis, however they meet? And what are some of the things you would look for in deciding which writers group you would choose?
I've been a member of several different writers groups, Romance Writers of America, Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers, a couple other ones over the years. And I think basically you really have to find the group of writers that works for you best and gets your voice and gets you as an artist. For me, I happen to have met 2 fabulous friends from a Colorado Romance Writers group, Holly Appelhans and Viola Estrella. Both are critique partners for many, many years at this point. And for me, I've met them through that, so that was totally awesome. But for me, with my working and writing and, you know, trying to exercise and stay healthy, I really, it's a challenge for me to find the time to go to weekly meetings. I tried to for a while, and sometimes I'll still go. I'm a local RWA member here in Memphis, and I'll still go, like, if the workshop looks really good. But making the connection, so I do think it's important to make a connection with other writers. But like now, we live in Memphis, and they're still in Colorado, so we do all of our work on email, but we still critique every week. And to me, that's invaluable. I mean, I honestly have told Viola sometimes I couldn't write if it wasn't for her. I just so look forward to sending my chapter to her and getting her feedback, and she always reads everything before I send it in. And so, yes, I think they're important, but you don't have to be in the mindset that you're going to go every week. It's great if you want to. I think it's a personal decision. But for me, making the connection with those writers groups has been invaluable.
Yeah, and it sounds like, too, with new technology, you can still participate and still manage your time better without having to physically be somewhere. So that's another benefit.
Oh, yes, and RWA and I think Mystery Writers, too, which I'm getting ready to join, have even online chapters because some people may live out remotely where they don't have a local group. And sometimes the local groups, you know, they can be fun. It's fun to network and all of that, but sometimes, you know, weekends are really big productive times for me. And by the time I go there and sit through, they have usually a business meeting first and then the program. It can be 4 hours, and 4 hours for someone like me is a long time. It's probably going to be better spent working on my novel, actually.
Yeah, definitely. And Patrice, so now speaking of that, like, and I always ask everybody this question too, because I'm just curious because I know it works differently for each individual, but do you, in terms of setting aside time for writing, are you pretty strict about, well, you know what, I'm going to write X amount of time every day and it's going to be between, you know, this hour and this hour, or are you a little bit more flexible with that? How do you keep yourself disciplined as a writer?
Well, the main thing for me is I have to be in my story world every day, because when I get out of it, the zone as I call it, it's just so hard to get back in, and sometimes it's hard to recapture that oomph that I had. So for me, I get up about 4 a.m., I walk on the treadmill for about 45 minutes, and while I'm doing that walking and reading, my own story ideas are starting to kind of come to me. I get off the treadmill, I go into my little office with my green tea for about a half hour, and I work on my book, and then I get ready for work, and I have the most awesome thing for writers. It's the AlphaSmart. I know it's kind of outdated technology now, but it's a little kind of handheld data processing unit, not a laptop, but it sits on your lap. It's one unit. I can type, and I bring that to work with me. And then on my lunch hour every day, without fail, I go to the library and I work on my book. And for some reason, having done some morning work and then afternoon work, I'm just on a roll. And then I will come home and I will hot sync to my computer. Now, I may or may not work in the evening. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I just kind of want to chill out and watch a movie with my husband, or, you know, we're going to go run errands or go out to eat or something like that. But so I'm pretty strict on the lunch hour and I'm pretty strict on the morning time. And then on the weekends, I'm not as strict, but I do write both weekend days. But I don't have a certain time, and I've never been a writer that has a certain page count. I'm just more, as long as I'm in my story world every day and stuff is coming to me about the story, I feel good and it all works.
Wow, that is so inspiring, because you are very disciplined, and that's great advice. I mean, what, you know, I agree with you. I think we need to stay in that mode every single day, however that looks for each individual, and certainly your system works very well for you. And it's funny that you mentioned page count. I'm the kind of writer, I know a lot of writers get very involved with word count, and I've just never been that way. And I just wondered, what are your thoughts about that? Because I don't live and die by certain rules. I just kind of write to get it out and then go back and edit. I don't really consciously think about how long is this chapter. So I'm just curious what your thoughts are about that.
As far as word count, now I do have, with my accounting background, I do have an Excel document that I do for every book, and I calculate the word count and the page count based on about 250 words a page, how long the book needs to be. For me, I have to at least have that in mind. And then I usually tend to write about 10-page chapters. So that kind of gives me an idea of how many chapters I need. And I do the W method, as we were talking about, a high-level plotting. But I don't get obsessed with, like, the chapter has to be 10 pages. But I kind of write till the natural end of the chapter. And I usually will, if I'm really trying to be good, like right now I'm currently working on the Glisten 2, I will, in my spreadsheet, type every day a word count that I did, just so I kind of feel like I'm accountable. But I don't have to do the word count. And some days, honestly, I may be editing the chapter I wrote the day before, and I don't really have a word count. And then I'll just make a comment that I'm editing. But that kind of does help keep me grounded. But I normally tend to have an idea where I'm going with the story, or at least the first half of the story. And then when I get to that point, I might reassess. So I may have some days where I don't have a word count because I've been brainstorming. But that's okay also, because I'm still, like I said, in my story world, which keeps me grounded in the story.
Yeah, and I think as the story unfolds, these things start to become clearer too. You know, it almost tells itself how to arrange it.
Well, and you have to follow your intuition. You know, I always start out, like I said, with a W. This is what I think is going to happen. But after that, you have to let the story take over. And there's been many times where I will, you know, subconsciously put something in chapter 3 that pans out in chapter 7. And you just kind of have to go with your writer's heart at that point.
Yeah, definitely. And so, Patrice, in the last, like, you know, the last part of the interview here, I want to move into a little bit about social media and marketing, because we talked a lot about discipline and finding the time to write every day, you know, around your full-time job in your case. And so that brings me to social media, which I think is definitely a blessing for writers, but I think we also have to be mindful of getting carried away and spending too much time on there chatting, because it is, let's face it, it is a lot of fun connecting with people.
Yeah.
So
it is.
Start with blogging. What are your thoughts about blogging, and do you maintain a blog every day, or how? What are your thoughts about that?
I think blogging is great, and like you said, with my time constraints, I don't have unlimited time to be on social media, obviously, though I could be on it a lot longer because it is so much fun. I'm just loving it. But I think blogging is really cool and really great, and I think it definitely can help connect you with your readers. I personally haven't done a lot of it. I do have one blog post on my website, and I know I need to work on more, but that's been the one thing it's been challenging to find time to do that also, because that is a different type of writing, and it does take away from my story creation when I'm doing blogging. I'd consider maybe like blogging in the character's voice, especially for my children's books. That would be fun, and the readers might like it better. But no, I think blogs are great. I do read some different writing blogs, not on a regular basis, and I do kind of hop around holistic health blogs. But I think if you have the time, definitely yes. And I should probably maybe even try once a week might be good. But like I said, I haven't been the best on that.
And what are the platforms that you use the most to kind of promote yourself and your work and interact and connect with other authors and readers?
Definitely Twitter. That's been a really big thing. Facebook some, but I'm finding I like Twitter better. It's short and sweet. It's fun, and people are posting different things, and I find a lot of inspirational posts. And also for GLSEN, we've done a couple of holistic health events. We did one in Baltimore last year in April, and it was awesome. It was the Annapolis first holistic health fair, and the energy was awesome. Everyone was excited about holistic health. And we had, I think I sold like 40 books in like a couple hours. And it was just totally awesome. And, you know, while I was able to interact with people and talk about holistic health, and people asked some health questions, people asked writing questions. And I'll never forget one lady came up to me and said, you know, she'd been battling with cancer. And she was in remission. And she just said, I think the whole reason I came was to buy this book. And I was like, wow, that was just huge. Yeah. So while I think social media is totally awesome, I also think it's great to get out there in person as you can and as it works for your platform to different events also. Because that, to me, was just like, you know, at that point I was like, well, my book has accomplished everything just by hearing her comment.
Yeah, and Patrice, you know, and that brings up another great point because I you're absolutely right. And I found when I self-published my first novel in 2008, I found that people were as interested in me as the author and the whole process of writing as they were in the book, and also that the idea of a, you know, quote-unquote local author kind of, you know, going around your local area, whether it be speaking at a library or different organizations or having people, you know, I had friends that organized little book signings for me. That was as effective as using social media because you get that really in-person connection. So, you know, and you're so good. I want to also say this, too, before I forget. I mean, you're so good at expressing yourself, and I think that's so important for authors as well. I find that sometimes people are reticent or maybe they're a little shy or they're just uncomfortable with expressing themselves either in a radio interview or in person, but that's such an important piece of the whole puzzle in finding success as a writer.
It is, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes as writers, as you know, we do tend to hole up by our computer wherever it is that we work, and it is very internal, and it is very solo. It becomes more external when you have, you know, editors and critique partners. But that is definitely breaking out of the mold. And one thing that's honestly helped me, I really believe, is the holistic health routine that I'm on. It's definitely made me feel better, give me more energy. And anytime, like, I'm nervous, I had to do a public reading at this show in Annapolis, and I was nervous. I was like, oh, my word. I was going to get up there on stage with a microphone, and I was like, oh, this is okay. But I took actually some homeopathics for anxiety, and it really worked. I got up there. I did it. But I still am better more one-on-one in the booth or, like, this type of scenario than being up on stage. Mm-hmm. I really don't like that. But I was able to do it with the homeopathics. It got me through it. But I do think it's important because once you start connecting with people, they are interested in, like you said, about your writing, about holistic health, about many things. And there really is no substitute to that in-person connection. But Twitter is a little bit like that because I think people's personality kind of shine through their posts, even mm-hmm. though we're limited to how many characters. But so I think if authors can work on both, that's really fabulous.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And the other thing I used to do for Twitter, and I want to get back to, is having a regular Twitter chat. I used to do them weekly, and then just like you're saying, you know, with just so many responsibilities, I haven't been able to do that in a while. But I found that was helpful with a lot of authors and other people that I represented, whether it was, you know, for a business that they had or a product. Those Twitter chats that kind of revolve around a particular hashtag where you have, let's say in the case of an author, you're asking them questions just like we're doing here, but it's all on Twitter. And by doing it that way, the great thing about Twitter is you have no idea how many people you're reaching because it's an open platform, unlike Facebook, where you're kind of limited by because you have to be connected to the person as a friend. So it's really unlimited when you're looking at Twitter as a way to reach people.
That's an awesome idea to do a Twitter chat. I've not participated in one of those. I'm fairly new to Twitter in the last year, but I think that would be great.
Yeah, well, Patrice, it's one of my goals for this year is to really kind of get back to that. And, in fact, there's a writer's group that I belong to. I'm going to kind of approach them about that idea because I think it would be a great way to, you know, take a different author each week and give them the opportunity to sort of increase their following on Twitter and create more impressions on there, which in turn will just, you know, kind of boost their ability to connect with readers and sell books. So, I mean, I definitely agree with you about Twitter being, I think it's my favorite platform now. And ironically, when I first started using it in 2008, I hated it until I discovered Hootsuite. I was like, what's the big deal about this? I don't understand why people like Twitter. Now, of course, I'm an Twitter addict. But once I discovered Hootsuite with the columns and you have your mentions in this column and your news feed in this column, then it started to make sense. And I thought, oh, okay, now I get this.
Well, I was the same way. I was totally resistant to Twitter. I'm like, I just don't have time for this. This is just too overwhelming. I can't. All these tweets are flying by. And then the Facebook, yeah, it's just more static. And, you know, I have to be friends and all this stuff. And so then I started on Twitter. Now, I have not gone onto Hootsuite yet. I do need to do that, it sounds like. But it's my favorite platform, too. I mean, I know there's Pinterest. I know there's LinkedIn. But to me, Twitter, I love it. I love it. You can put a picture on there. You can put a fast-paced little blurb. And I just love it. But I will have to check out Hootsuite. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, well, what Hootsuite is, it's a third-party application that just makes Twitter easier to use. So you can go to one place, and it's free. I mean, it's free. There's a basic free membership. And you can go to one place and manage all your social media accounts. So you go to Hootsuite, and in my case, I use that to manage Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. I don't have Pinterest on there yet. I tend to go to Pinterest on my own, but... So in other words, like especially with somebody that's pressed for time the way you are, you can just go to Hootsuite and manage everything, which makes it easier.
That sounds awesome.
Oh, it's great. And it definitely, you're an accountant, so you would like this. I mean, it puts everything in columns, so it's very easy to reply to people and see the tweets that are coming in. It's wonderful.
Awesome. Well, I will definitely check that out. I've heard about it. A friend of ours is using Hootsuite on his Twitter account.
Yeah, I just, like I said, it saved me, you know, back in the day. And I know Twitter improved, you know, their website from the time I first started. But way back in the beginning, it was, I just couldn't understand how people were making connections on there. And then somebody said to me, no, you got to try Hootsuite. And it was just like the light bulb went off. And I was like, oh, my gosh, now I get it. So,
wow.
Yeah, I definitely recommend that. But Patrice, before I let you go, just please let everybody know, speaking of Twitter, where they can follow you there and you know, more about your website and your blog, where any place online that they can find you, and especially if they have an interest in maybe you sending them that W plotting method also.
Yes, my email is patricebooks@yahoo.com. My Twitter handle is @patricebooks, and then my website is www.patricebooks.com. And Facebook, which I was just thinking of, I think it's facebook.com/Patrice Books. But if you put in Patrice Lyle, there's actually two Patrice Lyles on Facebook. But I am the author, so you can friend me there. And then my website, I do have a blog that has not been developed too much, but I do have one blog post there where I talk about kind of my holistic health journey and how I thought of the idea GLSEN.
Excellent. Well, Patrice, is there any, you know, really briefly, before I let you go, because we were talking about holistic health, do you have just a few tips that you can put out there for anybody listening that may want to start taking better care of themselves?
Yes, absolutely. I learned a lot when I was at the Wellness Center, and one of the things that really, really struck me was that she taught that in all disease, no matter what it was, the three basic things wrong that allowed your body to become sick with whatever disease it was nutritional deficiencies, toxic overload, and a wiped out vital force. And nutritional deficiencies plays a lot on to hydration. The body needs to be hydrated, and especially the pH of the body. That's the acid-alkaline balance of the body. And I am gluten-free and dairy-free, and that has spiked my energy tremendously. And as far as toxic overload, the body's lymph system is kind of the doctor within, And it works with the cardiovascular system, but the cardiovascular system has a heart to pump the blood, and the lymph system doesn't. It needs exercise. So that's why I exercise every day. And she always recommends 30 minutes a day minimum. I usually do 45 because, like I said, I'm reading my Kindle and enjoying myself on fiction. And if you do those two things, and obviously eat healthy, don't eat a lot of junk food, keep your diet clean and exercise and drink water, those things in itself can just move mountains and miracles. And, of course, stress is always a big problem in a lot of people's lives, and that's one thing that I have found exercising really helps with also. So I definitely am a huge proponent of just nutrition and exercise, and it's honestly amazing, and water. What can be done with just doing those things? People's, mm-hmm. you know, problems, depression and blood pressure, and myself, my blood pressure and cholesterol with my family heart history. When I was 26, the doctors wanted to put me on the medications and for life, and I just didn't want to go that route. And since I've been going the holistic route with the exercise and the walking and the water, which once you get used to it, it just becomes part of what you do. It just, you don't even really think about it anymore. And that's a lot of people's challenge when they first start on a holistic path. Oh, my gosh, I have to do all these things, and oh, it's going to be so hard. And if you just let that go and just do it, it just becomes easy. And now my blood pressure is like 100 over 60, and my cholesterol is like 140. And I did it without medication. And yet I was just in Alabama recently. My husband and I went down there to visit family, and the heart problems are all on my dad's side of the family. And, like, my cousins had 5 heart attacks. My other cousins had 4. My dad's had 2. And my aunt, everyone's had open-heart surgery. And I'm just thinking, wow, you know, a hereditary problem is definitely like the gun to your head, we say, in wellness. But whether or not the trigger gets pulled is your lifestyle. And it's like, it's just so amazing to me that the changes that can be made on stuff that is just not that difficult to do.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, absolutely. And I know from personal experience. And, you know, it's funny. My dad, he was a traditional doctor, a general and vascular surgeon, but he was such – I mean, from the time we were little, he was always – I just remember him always saying, drink lots of water. It flushes your kidneys. I mean, he was constantly, like, on us. So, you know, we always drank water. I'm thankful for that, and that's something that's continued to this day. And, you know, I totally get what you're saying with the exercise because I've been on that track, and – yeah, it's kept my blood pressure low. I mean, some days I think, gosh, maybe it's a little too low. I mean, I'll take my reading and it's like 90 over 60, and I'm like, well, okay, I guess it's better than the other way around. But yeah, it's so yeah, true. You just make these changes and you can see huge improvements.
Okay. Oh, absolutely. And I've had the same concern with my blood pressure. Sometimes it's been 90 over 60, but I recently was at a doctor's appointment, and I asked the doctor, and I said, is that too low? And she said it would only be too low if you were unhealthy. But if you're exercising and you're drinking water and you're taking care of your diet, then it's a great blood pressure. But, yes, it can be under different circumstances.
Yeah, and again, it goes back to the individual, I guess, and your own history and makeup and lifestyle as well.
Oh, absolutely.
So.
Well, that's awesome that your dad taught that. That's wonderful.
Yeah, he was always into that. You know, I have to say, and before I let you go, too, just to get a, you know, even though he was in the, you know, traditional medical field. I mean, my father always, and he was a surgeon, to him, surgery was always an absolute last resort. You always tried anything else, and including lifestyle changes with the patient before you ever resorted to something like that. So I guess maybe he was ahead of his time. Who knows? But
yes, I think he was ahead of his time. That's fabulous. We need more doctors like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Patrice, this hour has just gone by, and I want to thank you so much for joining me. And I want to encourage everyone listening to please follow Patrice at Patrice Books on Facebook. She and I go back and forth a lot, so if you're following me, you'll definitely see her in there. And Patrice, I'll have to bring you back in the future because I really enjoyed this so much.
Oh, well, thank you so much, and I would love to come back. This has been a lot of fun, and it's been fun talking with you on Twitter. And if you definitely get your Twitter chat going, let me know. I'd love to be a part of that, too.
Yes, I plan to this year, so you will be one of the first to know. I definitely want to get that started. All right. Well, listen, you have a great day, and stay warm.
You too. Okay, take care. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about what's ahead in the new year for RightStream, so please stay tuned.
Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the RightStream Radio Network. Tune in to Military Monday with host John D. Gresham, author, military historian, and journalist. John delves into a unique aspect of U.S. military history, as well as current events and issues affecting our men and women in uniform. Featuring exceptional guests, military experts, and authors, Military Monday with John D. Gresham entertains, informs, and encourages listeners to support those who put it all on the line for freedom. Military Monday with John D. Gresham. Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network.
Honor Flight provides, at no cost to the veteran, the opportunity to see the memorial that the American people have built on our National Mall. And I think that there's probably no better organization out there today that can provide something to somebody for nothing.
If anyone wants to see the importance of Honor Flight, look into the veterans' eyes and how they tear up when they are brought here.
When they walk into that memorial and they see that their friends will never be forgotten, that the sacrifice that they paid will always be cherished, always revered, always honored by this nation, they're taken back by that.
The best program I've ever been associated with. You know, we're all in the same fraternity. If it hadn't been for these guys, I don't know where we'd be today or what language we'd speak.
I say about the terrorist, Al-Qaeda, if it weren't for these guys, we wouldn't have to worry about terrorists today. We'd already be occupied. We'd already be a different country. So we owe them a lot.
We're racing against a clock. In another 5 to 7 years, it'll be a moot point. They will be gone. We're working as fast as we can, but we need so much support from so many people to make these dreams a reality. This is probably the last chapter in their lives. And for some, it's literally the last paragraph of their lives. What a way to end their stories.
This has been one of the really great days of my life.
I'm sure glad I was able to live long enough to see it.
Hi, this is Lisa Tarvis. I'm a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, energy healer, intuitive, and the author of the book, Just Believe. I'm also a host on the Right Stream Network. My radio show is called Just Believe and airs every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Please stop by my website at www.lisatarvis.com. That's L-I-S-A-T-A-R-V-E-S. For details on all the services I offer, information on my book, and my radio show. There are many amazing guests and fascinating topics scheduled for the show in the upcoming months. I look forward to connecting with you soon.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Right Stream and hashtag Right Stream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
And we are back, and this is your host, Daria Ann. You're listening to Right Stream Tuesday. I want to thank everyone who's still listening and hanging out in the chat room. I really enjoyed that interview with Patrice Lyle, and hope you all did too. You can follow her on Twitter at Patrice Books, and you can check out her website at patricebooks.com, patricebooks.com. And guys, I don't know, I have to be honest with you, I feel a little off my game today. I don't know if it's the cold weather or the fact that I just traveled back yesterday, had a very early flight from Philly back to Fort Lauderdale, and I'll tell you that I posted this on Facebook yesterday. I know this is a little off topic for Right Stream Radio, but anyone who's ever had the displeasure of flying out of Philadelphia can understand the truth of this statement, and that it's just as dysfunctional and inefficient as I remember. But anyway, after a very bumpy flight, which is even harder for this nervous flyer, I arrived in yesterday, and it was just a really long day, and I did get a good night's sleep last night, but I just feel like it's taking me a while to kind of get back into my routine. So I apologize if I sound like I'm talking too fast or disorganized today. But, you know, a lot of great things happened, throughout 2013 in terms of Right Stream and for me personally, including towards the end of the year having the opportunity to be a guest on Hugh Hewitt's program to talk about Right Stream and my association with the Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance, which if you're listening, I hope you'll check that out on Facebook, the Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance. And so I was able to promote a lot of their work and their purpose, their mission, if you will, on Hugh's show, in addition to the Right Stream Network, which I actually founded in March of 2013. So we're coming up on our one-year anniversary. And as you heard from the promo I played, On our Sunday host on the network, her name is Lisa Tarvez, and she hosts a show called Just Believe. And it's funny, as I was interviewing Patrice, I thought, you know, Lisa has a lot in common with her. Lisa is also a certified holistic health practitioner and intuitive. She wrote a book called Just Believe, which was released, I believe, in September of 2012, which kind of chronicles her experiences as a child being able to see and communicate with angels and how she eventually, after spending a lot of time in the corporate world, parlayed that into a holistic healing practice. And so Lisa interviews people, in a wide variety of areas. Occasionally she'll bring on psychics that do live readings on the air for anyone who's into that. I know there are a lot of people who aren't, but she'll do that, and those tend to be very, very popular. But she'll also bring somebody on like a Patrice to talk about wellness. And Lisa recently had on a reflexologist. She has John actually on Military Monday even interviewed Dr. Tanya, who's a chiropractor. But Lisa's show kind of delves into a variety of things from the paranormal to nutrition and healing and wellness to angelic communication and psychic readings. And I brought her into the network because, as I mentioned on Hugh's show, I'm trying to attract as many different people as possible. In other words, to appeal to as many different tastes and interests as possible on one network, in the hope that somebody might tune in to listen to Lisa's show, or even John Gresham's show, which is Military Monday, which airs every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And then maybe they'll find out about Right Stream Tuesday and tune in to listen to a liberty-loving author who's creating works of fiction to, you know, just as Patrice said, inform people while they're entertaining them, because I really believe that that is the way to go if we're ever going to get this culture back and sort of elevate it to its previous status before it became so degraded. So I'm really enjoying my association with the CLFA and I've just been able to book so many great guests for the show through April so far. One of my goals in 2014 was to be more like Lisa Tarvez, who books out months and months in advance. And so thanks to my involvement with the Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance, I've been able to book myself out for 3 months, which makes me very happy. So next week I'm going to be interviewing author D.B. Corey, and he writes in the thriller genre. And so look for promos this week about my interview with him, and that will take place next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern right here on the Right Stream Network. But on Mondays we have John D. Gresham, who hosts Military Monday. And John each week, well, first of all, John in his own right is a highly accomplished author. He's collaborated with the late Tom Clancy on many books, also with Dwight Zimmerman. One of his most popular books is called Uncommon Valor, which was about real soldiers serving in Afghanistan. And John is also with the Defense Media Network, in addition to being a military historian and journalist. And many times if you're the kind of person that enjoys watching the History Channel or the Military Channel, or even Discovery, I believe, you may turn that on and see John being interviewed on there as part of a documentary about a particular aspect of military history or a specific event that they might be discussing. So John is a highly accomplished individual, and I was so thrilled last March when, you know, he didn't miss a beat when I extended the invitation to join this little internet radio network, and he was thrilled. And in his words, you know, any media is good media, and he was very open to the opportunity. And in fact, John is hard at work looking for a host for a show we're going to start on Saturdays on technology. Now, it's not going to be a help desk kind of show. It's actually going to be a technology trends type of program where the host will bring in various experts to talk about what's up and coming in the realm of technology. And we figured by adding a show like that, we'll be serving yet another demographic to try to increase listenership on the Right Stream Network. And in August of 2013, we started a program called Family Power Hour, which is hosted by licensed clinical psychologist Dr. Billy Eisenberg and family law attorney Sheena Benjamin Wise. And Dr. Billy and Sheena, as they're affectionately known, really delve into specific, serious topics that people need to be aware of and certainly have more information about in terms of finding the skills and the knowledge necessary to maybe cope with some of these real-life problems, like teen suicide and cyberbullying and maybe raising kids in an age where they have access to a lot of information that parents might not necessarily want them to have access to via the internet and new technology. You know, technology overall has been a very positive thing, but I think if you're a parent, it's added a whole new dimension of things that you need to be on the lookout for and stay on top of if you don't want your children exposed to things too young. So Dr. Billy and Sheena cover a wide variety of topics, and they bring on experts in the field each week. And I want to stress that this is not an advice show. They're very clear about that. They're not giving out advice. They're offering people an opportunity to call in with questions, share their best practices on what has worked for them in dealing with a particular problem with human relationships. And, you know, they just invite people to talk with them, you know, call in, and they're very informal, yet they're also very informative. So I'm very pleased to have them on the network every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern for Family Power Hour. And then Friday night, Lisa Tarvez, her daughter Kristen Fetterman, and I host Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, which is a women's lifestyle show kind of designed to be a nice end to your week where you can just kind of kick off your shoes after a hard day of work, pour yourself a glass of wine or a cup of tea or the beverage of your choice, and just kind of chill out with the girls, where we talk about everything from, you know, skincare and makeup and fashion to, you know, dealing with difficult people. We had a show about that just before the holidays. And we bring on different guests each week to talk about various things and just to hang out with us. And we have a lot of fun, and we encourage you to call in as well. That show launched on November 29th. And Lisa, really, I have to thank her on the air because she's really been the one sort of taking responsibility in terms of booking our guests and really scheduling these broadcasts and directing them and where they're going to go. She kind of takes the lead in the interview process, which I really appreciate. So check out Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss on Friday nights here at 7 p.m. Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network. And folks, as far as you know, me personally, I have been hard at work ghostwriting a book called Steps to Salvation for a client, and it's been an amazing process. I have learned so much from it, and I'm really pleased to announce that I'm going to make my deadline of releasing this book in the first quarter of 2014, so I'm real excited about that, so please stay tuned. But I'm thrilled to announce I have a caller on the line. Don't know who this is because I don't have a producer. But caller from 910, what's on your mind?
Hi, Daria. How are you?
I'm well. How are you? Who is this?
Good. This is Jack July. I'm a member of the Alliance. And
hey,
I just
Jack.
Wanted to say that I really...
I said, hey, I'm so happy you called in.
Well, I'm happy to sit here and listen to your show. I was sitting here trying to pound out a book, and I really enjoyed Teresa's interview, and what I most enjoyed was her delving into the tween books, because I have a daughter who's 9 and a daughter who's 14, and there's so little out there to give them, to read, healthy things, good things, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's a
so
shame.
It is, and especially my 9-year-old, she's nuts about reading. I mean, she reads so much stuff, and she's far beyond a 9-year-old level. But then when I try to find her books, you know, you have to seine out the adult content, and there's just not a lot out there. So I'd just like to thank Patrice for that. She sounds like a heck of a woman.
Yeah, she is multi-talented, and she's a multitasker for sure. And, you know, Jack, it's funny, you know, and I'm probably dating myself by saying this, but when I was that age, you know, Nancy Drew was still popular, and I used to just devour the Nancy Drew mysteries. My friends and I would trade them back and forth and everything. And it's just a shame that there isn't, at least that I know of, and from what you're saying, there really isn't a series like that geared towards that tween demographic. It's sad.
Uh-huh. See, when I was a young man, I had to read things that of an adult nature. I mean, actually, when I was 14, I used to steal my mom's Harold Robbins books. Which kind of, I don't know if she knew that or not, but it was kind of, you know, and I learned a lot from those books, a whole lot from those books. But I also read things about the military, and I like military books like Run Silent, Run Deep, and the old World War II submarine novels. I enjoyed those. But that's all. I just wanted to say thank you, and I really enjoyed Patrice's interview, and that's it.
Well, thank you. Well, Jack, while I have you on the air, though, you and I are going to be doing an interview soon up here in the next couple of weeks. So why don't you give our audience a little teaser about your book and what we're going to be talking about?
Oh, well, first of all, I've never done an interview, so I have no clue what we're going to be talking about. But I suppose you want to talk about my book and a little bit about me, and that's fine. My book is called Amy Lynn, and it's a story about a little girl growing up in rural Alabama. Starts when she's 12, and it progresses through life until she's 21. At the end of the book, she's 21, and it's not a – I have no genre. You know, I can't even tell you – I can't even give you a hint what it's about. I've been trying to think of that because I know – I think our interview's in March, isn't it?
Yes.
Sometime
in March?
Yeah. So I've been trying to figure out what to say without actually giving away the book, but it's just about a simple country girl who faces some pretty heavy things and comes out the other side a little better, a little wiser, and I guess it's about, and it's also about her family. I mean, it's about how important your family is, how important your relationships are. You know, it's a lot of relationships. It's fiction. Some of it's partially based on my family. I had to wait till a lot of people died to write it. It's intense, it's violent, it's not for kids.
I'm looking forward to that conversation because to a lesser extent, and I didn't wait for anybody to necessarily pass away, but, you know, in writing my book a couple of years ago, got into some, not anything as heavy as in your book, which I started reading and really enjoying so far. But I definitely want to delve more into that because it is very – it can get very dicey when you're basing characters on real people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, there's a – my family starting, I don't know, at the turn of the century, they were basically outlaws and moonshiners. That's what they did. The other half of my family, my mom's family, were vaudevillian entertainers. So you can imagine the combination of those two making me. So – kind of crazy, but yeah, there was a. I'm writing the second book right now. It's the follow up to it called Golden Angel, and if you read the first book, you'll get to the end and you'll see exactly where the other book's going. And I really didn't mean to write it that way. I just couldn't figure out an ending, and I figured, well, people's lives don't end; they keep going. So I'll write it as if her life's going to keep going because it does. Well, and then people started buying my book, and I'm like, people really want to read this, huh? Okay, well, maybe I should write another one. So then I started tapping away on another one. But, I don't know. I can't...
Well, I think that's awesome, Jack. No, that's one of the things I love about new technology and the ability to self-publish. I mean, I alluded to this with when Patrice was, you know, on the air with me, is that we have so much more freedom to just be who we are as writers. And I love that. You know, you don't necessarily have to get locked into a particular genre. At least that's how I feel. I'm kind of like, you know, if you have an important story to tell and some messages to get across, then just go for it.
Yeah, I like Clancy. I like Glenn. I enjoyed all those authors, and I enjoyed the characters that they built and the characters they developed. And just kind of by accident, I built a character. And I built a really interesting character, I think, and I can see her on adventures far off into the future. And I don't know, if people will read it, I'll keep writing it. And if they don't, that's fine too. I never intended on doing this. This was a complete accident. But it's fun, you know. I enjoy it. I sit at my computer in my bedroom, and you know, it's funny when Patrice was talking about how she got ready to write and the things that she did and working out and all this and all that and all this and all that. You know, I make a pot of coffee. I take my kids to school. And from about 9 in the morning till 11, 12 o'clock, I pretty much have nothing to do because of my work schedule. So, which is 5 on, 5 off, 1 on, 1 off. I actually work in a factory 12 hours a day. So that's my schedule. So I get time to write. Then I go to work. And then my wife's real understanding about it. She's quite a character, so it all works.
That's excellent, Jack. And you know what? Kia is in the chat room, our fellow member of the CLFA, and she is saying that to answer your question about books for kids who read above grade level, look up any books printed before 1960. So just a little piece of advice from Kia.
Okay, before 1960. Okay, I got that. I wrote that down.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome. All right. Well, I don't want to burn up any ideas or thoughts I might have because I don't have very many, and we're going to have a long time to talk. So, but Okay. Well, I just want to thank you very much, though. I want to thank you for the show, and I want to thank you for the fine interview with Patrice, and introducing me to the website and all the interesting authors and other people I've had an opportunity to meet. So I want to thank you for that.
Oh, well, thank you, Jack, for calling in and for listening. I really appreciate it. And I'm looking forward
yes,
to
ma'am.
Our interview.
Yes, ma'am. Have a good day.
You too. God bless.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Very nice. I love having callers, ladies and gentlemen. And by the way, Amy Lynn is an excellent book. I mean, like I said, I'm still kind of early into it, but it's wonderful. In fact, I wish, you know, one of the things I struggle with is having enough time to read and host shows and blog and do social media training and marketing for clients while I'm, you know, I mentioned before I took Jack's call that I'm on track to complete this ghostwriting book. So I've really had a focus to get this done. And speaking of Kia, I want to give you a little shout out as well because on this particular project, Kia is our graphic designer. She's hard at work on a logo as we speak, which Kia, I am about to share with my client who I will see this evening. And Kia is also working on the book cover. And, you know, Patrice mentioned that, too, in the interview. It's so important as a self-published author to hire a professional to create a professional book cover because people do judge a book by its cover, and especially if you are self-published. We already have that hurdle to overcome in the minds of readers. You know, fair or not, like it or not, it is what it is. And so you as the author really, you know, between having it edited, having beta readers, and ensuring that the content is the best it can possibly be, you also have to make sure that the outer packaging is the best that it can possibly be. So I am thrilled to be working with Kia, who is also the author of a fabulous book called Night Machines, which scared the heck out of me, Kia, and I know she's listening because she's in the chat room, but I really enjoyed it. It was such a unique, I mean, it was a thriller, but her concept was one that I had never read before, and it was scary. It was really, really good. So Kia is actually going to be joining me next month, I believe, in February. And I don't have my schedule in front of me, so I'm completely going on memory here. But I believe she's going to be the second or third Tuesday in February to talk about her new book, Underlake, which is geared towards a teen audience. So I'm looking forward to chatting with Kia, just as I did with Patrice, on sort of like the different mindset that you have to get into when you're writing adult fiction versus fiction geared for teenagers, because I really find that fascinating. So I am definitely looking forward to that. And I'm just really thrilled. And like I said, I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. Kia's saying she's sorry she can't call in. But yes, February 11th, my guest on WriteStream Tuesday will be author Kia Hebe, author and graphic designer Kia Hebe. And by then, Kia, you know, we'll have, hopefully Shlomo will have decided on his book cover and his logo, and we can talk about that a little bit as well. But I was really thrilled to have the opportunity to end the year on a high note on December 27th by having the opportunity to appear on the Hugh Hewitt Show, not just to talk about my own work and about WriteStream and the network, but also the Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance. And like I said, I'm part of this group now on Facebook, and they're wonderful people. And when I was talking to Patrice about writers' groups and things like that, I really feel like with the CLFA, I've got everything because there are people there who are supportive. They'll offer constructive criticism if you need it. But it's all done in a well-intentioned way designed to make all of us better writers and, you know, to help us hone our craft. And somebody said in there, and I thought this was a really excellent point, you know, after I spoke with Hugh, that she was really surprised, that Hugh was surprised, you know, to hear about people writing fiction geared towards liberty. You know, in other words, people writing about liberty and freedom and personal responsibility and a strong work ethic, you know, strong work ethic, whatever it might be, as we, you know, as those of us who believe in the United States Constitution, he seemed very surprised that people would use fiction as a vehicle for expressing those themes. And I made the point on the air, and hopefully it got across to him and some others that, you know, these nonfiction books, yeah, I read them. You know, political junkies might read them. People who already are part of the choir will read them. But they're not really doing much good in terms of changing other people's hearts and minds. And these are also people who get out, who vote. You know, they may not be watching news. Yes, the media is biased, but not everybody who votes is even turning on the news to even see the biased media. But they are watching sitcoms. They are reading fiction, and they are getting the embedded messages that are in there. You know, I conducted a little experiment during the 2012 campaign where I was purposely visiting websites that I wouldn't normally visit, like TMZ and others like that, just to see what was going on. And I could not believe some of the advertisements that I was seeing on there on behalf of, you know, big government and statism and keeping people sort of in this dependency mindset. So if you don't think people are influenced by pop culture and in turn, you know, at the ballot box, then this is a wake-up call. Consider this a wake-up call. And if you want to find out more about the CLFA, well, then go to Facebook and you can look up Conservative Libertarian Facebook, Fiction Alliance. Excuse me. I'm as bad as Hugh Hewitt because he referred to it that way. Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance, and find out what our multi-talented authors are doing and what kind of work they're producing. The other great thing about this group is that we cover all kinds of genres, from science fiction to romance to drama to, I mean, suspense. You name it, we've got it covered. So check us out there. And also check out the RightStream Radio Network by going to rightstreamradio.com. As soon as we identify our host for this new technology show, I will be promoting it there and asking everyone to tune in. Like I said, that show we plan on airing on Saturday mornings, I believe. So John Gresham is hard at work on putting that all together for us. The goal is to have that show up and running by the end of the first quarter. And stay tuned for more information about Steps to Salvation. One of the things that happened, too, after a few days after the Hugh Hewitt show, I finally decided to share what I'd written so far with my mom, who, believe it or not, I know she's my mom, but she's also a very honest critic, which is why I shared the manuscript with her. And so I gave it to her, and I went downstairs, and I was doing some work. This was while I was still visiting up in Pennsylvania for Christmas. And while she was reading, I was downstairs on the computer doing some work. And about an hour later, I came upstairs, and she looked at me, and she said, "I love it," which really blew me away and validated this concept, which is not my own. I believe me, I cannot take credit for the concept of this book. It's all my client, but it's been a privilege really to bring his concept to life and put it into words for him, because especially because English is a second language for him. He is one of the most brilliant people I've ever met, although he doesn't have a higher degree. He owns a very successful business. He's a hard worker. In fact, he works so much, I have to catch him when I can, and that's why the digital recorder has been such a wonderful thing as well, because I record all of our collaborations and use them while I'm actually writing his book. But it has been such an incredible learning experience having to write this book. And I don't want to give too much away right now, but it's set in the future in 2412, but it definitely has historical implications, and we get into what really happened with a lot of these historical figures and what they really did in history. So I think it's gonna cause a lot of people to start thinking. So I'm really excited about it, and I'm very, very excited again to see what Kia comes up with for the cover. It's all starting to become very, very real, which is again just as a ghostwriter, a really exciting experience. And I could spend a whole hour just talking about ghostwriting versus writing your own novel, but we don't have that much time left. And I know I'm rambling, and I don't want to do that. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in and listening. If you would like to learn more about me or listen to my interview with Hugh, you can go to my blog. It's dariadigiovanni.com. I've got it posted on there. Check it out. Again, check out the Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance on Facebook. And you can also find my author page there, Daria Ann, with an E, author. Follow me on Twitter, at Daria Ann, D-A-R-I-A-A-N-N-E. And also follow our RightStream account, which is at RightStream, W-R-I-T-E, stream. We also use hashtag RightStream and hashtag CLFA for Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance. And I am going to ask my buddies in there about the possibility of maybe starting a Twitter chat using the CLFA hashtag and possibly the RightStream hashtag. Maybe we might not be able to do it every week, but perhaps we can come up with a schedule that would work for everybody and give each author an opportunity to kind of be in the spotlight and expand their Twitter presence. So stay tuned for that. I'm having this on-air brainstorm, I guess, but I think it's a great idea, and I hopefully everyone else will too. So everybody, I'm going to sign off for today. I will see you back here again next week with author D.B. Corey. Go to my blog, DariaDiGiovanni.com, to learn more about DB and the links back to his website. But he will be my guest next week, and we will delve into his book and other things that he is working on. And the next show up on the network will be Family Power Hour tomorrow night at 7 p.m., so I hope you'll tune in for that. And also for Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss at 7 p.m. on Friday. And until then, everybody, God bless and keep rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Mm-hmm.